Here at the Product and Packaging Powerhouse, our key mission is really to help with unveiling the realities of product developments, packaging strategies, and business tactics, empowering you, productpreneurs, and brands to advance, ascend, and accelerate your products into your marketplace. Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's segment right here on the Product and Packaging Powerhouse. And guys, I'm so excited for my conversation with a bad girl in the industry, a power lifter, a mom, and a VP who's doing her thing in the CPG space. And so I have the privilege of having Ms. Rachel Hassel, who is the VP of Procurement at Harvest Hill Beverage Company. She also has extensive experience within the CPG world. So she has background and experience working at Revlon, SC Johnson Lifestyle Brands. She is known for strategic sourcing, supply chain optimization, and fostering strategic partnerships. And so outside of her corporate life, she is an active mom with two little ones. If you follow her on LinkedIn, you've seen multiple posts about her children, which I can take a thing or two from them myself as an adult. She also is active on various boards within the community and is very intentional about making sure that we're being allies in the community as well. And so guys, for today's show, Rachel Hassel, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. How could I ever say no to a conversation with you? Let's be serious. Come on.
Well, I appreciate that. And I feel like our conversation has been very organic since the first time we met, a year to date almost now. Where we met on March 1st, 2023 at a panel we were all on together. So it's good to come full circle in us having this conversation today. To get us started for today, share a little bit about your story, your background, and how you landed in the world of procurement.
Yeah. So just to give everybody a little bit of context, you know, I started in the world of packaging, right? From a professional career development thing. So we'll kind of take you through that, but let's go all the way back to the start. So when I'm talking like when I was three years old, I promise I won't go step by step through this, but when I was three, I knew I was going to Michigan State, right? That was just kind of like a non-negotiable. My dad went to Michigan State. My aunts and uncles went to Michigan State. You know, when I was growing up, people would ask me like, who's your football team? Who's your basketball team? And I'd say, Michigan State Spartans. Like that was what I was always going to do. So fast forward to 2004, you know, I started at Michigan State and I was pre-med, kicking butt. Everything was great, 4.0. And then I realized I did not have the patience for patients. Like I could not deal with your day-to-day patients. So I started looking into other majors, was looking into all these different engineering fields, things like that. A good buddy of mine said, Rach, you talk way too much. Like you can't be like a civil engineer or a chemical engineer. Like that's going to be a no-go. So I found out about packaging and it just clicked. It was a mix between business and engineering, creativity, you know, consumers and interaction, psychology, right? All these great things, sustainability. And I knew that that's just what I wanted to do. And on top of that, at Michigan State, you had to do an internship. And I was like, cool. So you graduate and then you already have industry experience. And so I was sold on packaging from there. And I was super lucky when I was at Michigan State. I did two internships, one with Unilever on the global hair team that was in Chicago at that time. And then in Munich, Germany for Kraft Foods. Right. So graduating, I got multiple job offers, but decided to go with Unilever and that global hair team. And between the time I was there as an intern and then graduating, that team had moved over to the UK. So I was like, boom, done. Right. Like pack up the bags. They did everything with my visa, got my visa and moved over there. And it was great. So spent the first couple of years out of college in package engineering, did global engineering, regional engineering, got some exposure to the mergers and acquisitions part of the world as well, which was super insightful. And on a rainy day, most days were rainy in the UK, let's be serious, but on a rainy day, I think it was 2012, I got a tap on the shoulder from a buddy in procurement. And he said, you'd be really good in procurement. And I said to him, I laughed. I said, no, Dave Moore, wonderful human, very particular procurement style. If any of you know procurement people, we all have a style about us. And I said, Dave, I can't do what you do. You're great. I just can't do it. And he said, no, you don't need to do what I do. I'm going to teach you the basics, and then I'm going to help you figure out how to do procurement your way, and you're going to be phenomenal. That is how I got into the procurement space. Really, that's my story. And since I made that jump, I haven't looked back and moved then to California, worked at what was People Against Dirty, the Method brand products, did all their packaging procurement, grew my responsibilities into co-manufacturing, and then became a head of the SC Johnson lifestyle brand division, which included then Mrs. Myers and Baby Gannix and some other cool brands, and led their procurement group before joining Revlon. So yeah, it's been an awesome journey and experience. And starting in packaging for sure was like the best bedrock of my procurement experience.
That's phenomenal. So let's just go back to where you mentioned you knew at 3 years old you were going to Michigan State.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like when you're coming from legacy households, you know, for whatever university, right? So I feel like a lot of times as a kid, you see what our parents do, or siblings or family members who are going to these legacy schools. And you're like, I want to go there, you know, for the football, for the basketball, for the camaraderie, for a lot of times it's not even about the programs when we're young. It's really about, you know, what's the highlight? Like, I want to see how they're having fun and all of that. So I grew up in the South. I'm a Southern girl to my core. I'm from Arkansas. So Razorbacks is my college team. We go hard in SEC. You know, but with that, like, I knew, like, growing up, a new family that went to University of Arkansas, I was like, okay, yeah, that's where I'm going. But I didn't go there. You know, but to the fact of knowing at a much early age that you're going to Michigan State is key. To going to Michigan State and you were studying pre-med. So when I went to college, I was studying pharmacy. So I just knew I was going to pharmacy school. You know, I studied for the MCAT, I studied for the PCAT.
Yeah.
Got in this in pharmacy. I was like, oh no, this is not it for me. Because I started off on the pharmacology side for research. Mm-hmm. And I was like, ain't no way. I'm a people person. I cannot sit here and look at four white walls for 30 some years and I'm just collecting data. Like, not gonna do it. So we have some similar backgrounds and stories. You know, I didn't study packaging, but I came in packaging at the right time. So I love hearing about everybody's story and how they came into the world of packaging and how they transition into what they're doing present day for you, which is procurement.
Well, and Megan, the key takeaway from what you just said is saying yes, right? So it's not being closed off, right? And that's whether it's packaging, products, opportunities, career, whatever, just saying yes, right? That's half the battle, right? Being open. And Megan, you've done that so many times, right? And so that starts from a young age, just being open to saying yes, right? So.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, I used to say yes quite a lot. In some trouble for some things, but it's ultimately helped me a lot. So it's been much better for me saying yes as an adult versus when I was a kid, you know, just getting into a lot of stuff. But that's a whole nother topic, right? So with your time in the procurement space, you know, after having years of experience working as a packaging engineer, global, regional levels, and also international, you know, and also learning like this, you're developing your own style within procurement. So what would you say has been one of your challenges you've experienced working in this space?
Yeah, I think, you know, kind of going through whether it's COVID, right? And everyone talks about like, all these black swan events. Okay, it's day to day, right? No matter anything, right? We're all facing challenges, right? And I think what comes up in the procurement space is, you know, what is your resiliency plan, right? Or what is your lack of resiliency in your current space? It can be very difficult to build resiliency if you want to think of it like, oh yeah, in a perfect world with no limitations, no limitations on working capital or people or anything else, right? You would just have loads of inventory and you would have multiple vendors in multiple locations. Like that's never, never going to happen, right? So in real life, building the resiliency has to really be about how are you understanding your total supply chain, right? And how are you ranking and prioritizing within that to best allow you to flex because you're going to need it, right? So resiliency for sure in procurement is the number one thing that people don't value enough or aren't very good at associating dollar values with. Because you always, when you're in procurement, it all comes back to those dollar signs. So you need to be able to quantify what that resilience can supply you. And there's really good ways to do that, quantifying downtime, quantifying changeover, quantifying losing customers, right? But these are all things that, you know, really good procurement people can help to do to prioritize that resiliency.
So it's a perfect segue into our next question, because a lot of times we always think about like the Fortune 500 companies and the big corporations that have a procurement executive like yourself in place. But we also are seeing a lot more independent and indie brands come to market as well that may not have a procurement executive or consultant on their team. So when you talk about building a resiliency plan, which is great, what can small businesses or indie brands start doing to make sure they're creating that resiliency plan?
Yeah. So here's the top tip. Here's the magic unlock thing, right? And, okay. And big companies don't even do this. It is so much easier to qualify a secondary vendor during the development process than it is when you're without any supply. Mm-hmm. I always tell people, like, hey, if it takes you 2 weeks longer, if it costs you a little bit longer to qualify two of your critical components, right? Do it up front and you will save money on the back end. And I'll tell you, Megan, because you think like big companies would nail this and do this. They don't, right? So many people do not do this. And this is the easiest thing to do to help yourself in the long run.
And so I appreciate you for sharing that and being transparent, because, and we say a lot of the same things too. So with the brands I work with and partner with, they're like, I should be thinking about those things downstream. No. We do this at conception stage and development stage, because you need to know what the dollars and cents looks like in order for you to make the dollars and cents, for it to make sense in your business. So as you're talking about, you know, understanding the bottom line, because it all comes down to dollar bills, you know, and really being intentional about creating that resiliency plan is key. So doing it during the development stage is definitely going to save a lot more headache for brands. And so I really appreciate you for sharing that, because we would think bigger companies would have those things in place, but we're all human, right? So we're all learning and navigating the field as best as we can. And tribal knowledge goes when the person leaves and emails get buried and archived and you don't know where they go. So I think that's a key point for any scale of business, to be honest, start qualifying during the development stage. So with your experience within packaging world, from an engineer to now a VP of procurement, we're seeing the world change drastically and rapidly right before our eyes. And so with you being very strategic of how you source and procure different goods, how do you see the future of strategic sourcing and procurement evolving?
So I think one of the key things, and this comes back to, you know, there's a whole bunch of talk now about like, how is AI changing procurement? How is AI changing everything, right? But let's talk about it in a very narrow procurement sense, right? It is changing the world. Procurement or great procurement has always been about relationships. Always, 100%. But so many people have devalued what it means like for to have a really true and great relationship and how much value that can bring. And with the introduction and the digitization and AI coming in, right, it is going to make the relationship even more critical, because it's going to level that playing field, right? So if you had, you know, mountains of resources who were crunching data for you all day, every day, that kind of stuff's going away. So where you're really going to see great procurement rising to the top is those people who are prioritizing their relationships. And that's going to make you from your mediocre base set to what is like truly spectacular, right? And it's going to help you unlock the value.
I appreciate you for sharing that, because we're in a stage of seeing AI take over everything within, you know, the past year and how we operate. So now seeing AI in manufacturing, AI in project management, like everybody's using ChatGPT or Bard, there's no shade. Just make sure you don't plagiarize, okay? You just have to put that out there. You know, so we're seeing AI and using it every single day in our ways of working, you know, but to your point, being able to really cultivate those relationships is what's number one. It should be priority. And so I shared a book on my interview segment with Brad Levin that's written by Jeffrey Gilmer, The Little Black Book of Connections. Mm-hmm. So I take this with me, because regardless of what I'm doing to represent the business, to network with different people, to build those strategic relationships, I reference back to this book to make sure I'm thinking through thoroughly how to still cultivate those relationships, like you and I when we first met. You know, so I think that's something really big. And a lot of times we think digitization is always the way to go, and we lose people first. And it's like people has to still take top of priority. Then the processes and the technology can then follow. So it's good to see, you know, I like AI, but I have my own thoughts on it, but it's not here to replace. It's here to complement.
Absolutely. Someone said to me, like, you know, treat AI like an intern. right? Like you're going to give it data and stuff to process, but then like you need to check it. You need to make sure it's valid. And what I would just say is that when I pick up the phone and call a vendor, like my vendors are picking up my phone call. They're not picking up an AI bot phone call, right? Like, and when I need something, they're picking up because of the relationship, not because some bot is telling them to change a PO, right? So
yeah, I think that's key, you know, and it's good that your vendors and suppliers are picking up the call. You know, when you call, that goes to show a testament of how you operate business and do business and treat people as well. Because you don't have a lot of people that's answering the phone nowadays. They're like, oh, just let it go to voicemail. So it's a true testament to how you operate and your way of working style as well. So going back to one thing that you mentioned, where it's really thinking about like the dollars and cents to see if it makes sense, right? So how do you balance the need for like cost effectiveness when you're thinking through innovation in the procurement stage?
Yeah, so it's all about value, right? And where do you invest that value, right? So if you said like, hey, so I have option one and option two in this packaging format, right? Are you looking to get speed to market? Right. Like, so is it the most important thing that you get that product on shelf now because of a competitive threat or whatever it might be? So speed, you might be prioritizing the speed, right? So I'm going to invest in someone who's next door to me and has a really short lead time versus, oh, I can put it on a boat from China and get it in however many weeks, right? So it's really about what is going to drive value for your business and your consumers. I was laughing with I won't say which company, with a brand manager who was absolutely just, she needed to have this one element. She was like, the inside of this cap needs to be like this different color. And I said, I don't know any consumer that's going to pay more money to have the inside of that cap a different color. And unless you can tell me how many more consumers are going to buy that product, we're not paying that money, right? So it's really just about knowing what is going to drive the most value for your company and for your brand. And that might change based on different things that are in your world and different influences or stresses that your business has, but really understanding that value, what's going to drive it. That's how you make those decisions on what you can invest in.
I like that. So a lot of times we don't look at value. You know, I feel like that's an afterthought, like when you're looking at ROI, but a lot of times we're thinking up front, like, okay, what's the dollar value? You know, so to your point, how you're sharing with the brand, they want to make the inner part of the cap be a different color. Will a consumer really pay more for this color cap? I'm shaking my head. I don't even know what it is. Like, you know, that's not a value to us because at the end of the day, depending upon where you're geographically located, it's going to get recycled. It may go in the trash because at most recycling places, they're not actually recycling that size cap, or it's just going to be a toy for, you know, that's laying on the ground, or a toy for an older kid that they're going to use for bottle poppers or whatever the case is. So it's not worth it. So
and just remember, you can always cost save yourself right out of business.
Say that one more time. What's the whole quote?
You can always cost save your way out of business, right? So you want to just prioritize nickeling and diming, you will find yourself out of business very, very quick. You want to race to the bottom? Good luck, right? No one wants to race to the bottom. There's a threshold. Want to add value, there's always more value that you can add, right? So
that should be a phrase. Look, you probably should trademark that, Rachel. Just
I'm sure it's not from me. I have many amazing people. The whole race to the bottom versus, you know, like adding value. There's a great book by Paul Polman called Net Positive, and it's about the Unilever story around sustainability and things like that. And the whole concept is that you can try to be less bad, or you can try to create good, right? And so the whole like net positive is like, how do you add more goodness, and whether it's like sustainability, these sorts of things, because you can't, there's so far you can go down and towards the bottom, right? But if you view it as, I can always do more and be better.
Yeah.
So I won't take the whole, I think that kind of came from there. So I want to give Paul Polman credit for that one. So.
Okay. Well, shout out to Paul. I'm going to add this to my book list to read out for this year. So you said net positive. I love that. So thank you. Look, I was trying to give you all the credit too, Rachel. So that's why I'm like, say that one more time. Say it for everybody so they can hear you louder. Okay. So I appreciate you for sharing that and also the resource book. And so speaking of value for the business, for consumers, and how we actually are starting to build out this resiliency plan, right now, everybody's talking about sustainability. I'm sure you hear it quite a bit. I've seen you talk about ESG and you're very passionate about it because it thinks through the company organization and initiatives and also procurement and how you're sourcing, you know, for strategic through your strategic partnerships with packaging. So my question to you is, you know, with the various sustainability initiatives, ESG, state and federal regulations, how do you really think through and ask the team to ensure that they're thinking through the strategic initiatives, as well as working with your suppliers and vendors on alignment with your sustainability initiatives? So it's a two-part question.
Yeah. So first and foremost, and we're going to say it again louder for the people in the back, what is your definition of sustainability, period? So many people cannot answer that question. So yeah. If you can't say what sustainability means for your organization, how do you expect anybody to help you get there, right? I've been in very large organizations who had to spend a lot of time working that and then reworking that. And then I've been in some organizations super crystal clear. This is what sustainability means to me, because you can't be everything to everybody, right? And that applies to sustainability. So, you know, are you trying to reduce your materials? Are you trying to make them mono material? Are you trying to increase your levels of PCR? Because if you start trying to tackle all those, you're going to fall flat on everything, right? So the number one thing in order for your business to succeed and then for your vendors to succeed is to actually know what you want. And I say that and I'm like looking at myself and I'm looking at you thinking like, well, duh, but no, right? No, so many people, Megan, who you talk to don't actually know what's sustainable. I want to be sustainable. Well, what do you mean?
What does that mean? Yeah. I think that's key, because when I did an interview with Corey Connors, we talked about the same thing. And he was asking me, what does sustainability and beauty look like? Because that's my main sector. I was like, what does sustainability mean to the brand? And what is the impact it makes on the consumer? Because my definition of sustainability is really on the operational side for my business. But for some people, it's, you know, how they are focusing on ESG. Some of it is sustainable packaging, but you have to have the things in place to make sure your packaging is sustainable. But understanding what sustainability means to you and the organization, ultimately the impact is going to make to the consumers, is what's really big. And so as you're thinking through this, I'm just curious, you know, with you being a procurement executive, how are you training your team to have this mindset to think through what does sustainability mean? How does it align with our internal company initiatives and how you do business with your suppliers?
Right. Again, so a lot of it's asking questions why, like, you know, trying to get that level deeper. Because again, we're there out searching for vendors. We're trying to communicate to vendors. And if we're not 100% clear, which a lot of times people aren't, with anything with my team, I tell them, like, always ask why. Try to get that like level deeper, trying to get that level of understanding, because someone's going to ask you, right? So you want to be able to talk about it from every angle and from every person, right? So, you know, in my world today, right, you know, we're really focused on hitting these different regulations that are coming through. And so first and foremost was, well, do we actually really understand the regulation, right? We don't have an internal regulation team. And a lot of, you know, the people that are going to be listening to this podcast, you don't have an internal regulation team, right? So I jumped on a webinar last week so I could get to understand some of the regulations more, because I was like, I don't actually know if we really understand what's being asked of us. So, you know, for us, like, there's so many resources available out there, right? But you need to understand why and what you're really aiming for to then be able to ask your vendors, like, hey, can you support me in this, right? Yeah. Also ask if you're not sure, like, on regulations, let's say like regulations, right? Because a lot of people don't have regulation teams, right? So, you know, ask your vendors too. They're supplying everybody. They should know too. So just, you know, like really talking to them, understanding what they're doing, right? Understanding yourself. It's most important. So
absolutely. And when you say regulations, I want to do like a whole mic drop right now, because a lot of times with indie brands, for example, those are some of the main brands we work with. They're like, well, I don't need regulatory. No, you do. And actually, let's pause doing working with me and go get a regulatory specialist. Here's one that's on my team. Work with them, speak with them first, because they should be part of your conversations during development. Okay. To help you understand, okay, where is this product going into? What market? You know, are you doing D2C or is this retail? You know, information for the product labeling has changed, especially in beauty. We talk about Mocra extensively and we still are all like, we don't know. We're still kind of like in flux right now, you know, but because it's so much information. And to that point, if you don't have an internal regulations team or regulatory team, there are plenty of consultants that can help you with this. But like you mentioned, understanding the regulations that are in place for your respective industry is key, because then that will help you with determining your why, helping to drive those decisions, you know, and determining which vendors to work with as part of that as well. So I think that's big. And there's so many regulations we're focusing on right now.
Oh, Megan, like, tell me about it. And it's not just what your regulations are today. What are they going to be in a year's time? What are they going to be in 2 years?
Exactly.
Time? Not just what state you're in, because all the states are different, right? And then mm-hmm. you're like, oh yeah, and I sell online. So, oh, someone in the UK is going to order this. And then all of a sudden it's like, UK,
that's
oh,
a different
and then
conversation.
The EU, it's going to go to France. My goodness, right? So you have to be thinking much, much wider about it, right? And again, with a lot of these, you know, small and indie brands, these brands that are online, your world is so much bigger than you possibly imagine, right? Mm-hmm. So you need to know this product could go anywhere. What does that mean, right? Mm-hmm. So it's a huge complexity. So, you know, we talk about like people that you need to invest in. Regulatory consultants are awesome. So I would highly recommend it.
Yeah. And look, guys, you hear Rachel saying the same thing I share too. If you do not hire anybody else on your team, I would love to work with, you know, most people, but everybody should have regulatory team. That should be your number one resource. And then you start building out your team. So you can have packaging engineer. I have those people on my team, to procurement managers like Rachel, and understanding people who are in the procurement world, to logistics, fulfillment. You can start building out your team, but regulatory team should be number one. Then legal, I would say, really neck and neck.
You and I are mind melding, because I was like, legal, you need a good legal person, right?
Yes. Absolutely. So, you know, they do complement each other, and they are part of what we do in our respective businesses as well. And we work very extensively with these teams too, to make sure we're compliant, we're understanding the regulations, we're asking a lot of questions too. So we're trying to ask why as well. Why do we have to do this? Why is this important? When is this change going to be taking effect? If I have to do a phase in of packaging, what does that look like? Does it comply with what's coming down the pipeline in the next year? So to that point, like Rachel mentioned, there's a lot of things we have to have, but ultimately at the end of the day, understand what sustainability means for you and the business and the impact, and making sure that you are having a regulatory team, internal, external consultant, whatever that looks like for you, to be in place to help keep you abreast of all the different things that are coming down the pipeline as well.
And
so
the second thing to add to that is, are you planning to communicate with your consumers about your sustainability initiatives, right? Because it's one thing to be sustainable, and you have some people who are stale and they don't talk about it. And that's fine. That's a choice, right? And that could be because of the complexity of it, many, many things, right? But so it's, what is your sustainability mission? And then are you planning to talk about it with your consumers? Those two things are required, because it drives a lot of other decisions around it, right? Everyone's really worried about greenwashing, and it's a thing. So I have plenty of people I know and plenty of brands who are very sustainable, and they don't talk about it because they don't want to be accused of greenwashing, right? Mm. So, you know, your choice of, am I going to talk about it or not, is also important. So, you know, how much do I need to invest in those elements to make sure that it is true and that it is sustainable, to keep those sustainable promises, right? So those two elements are crucial when you're talking about sustainability and then working with your vendors on creating that product for you.
Guys, this is gold. If you don't follow Rachel on LinkedIn, I need you to do so. Her link is down in the show notes for you all, so you can get engaged and see her awesome content and the gems that she continuously drops, okay? This is just a segment of all the gems she drops. So shout out to Rachel. Thank you for being here with us. And so I want to talk through like the process, right? Because with you being very intentional about really developing those relationships, still leveraging AI and digitization, really thinking about building out their resiliency plan and understanding and asking people to think through, what does sustainability mean? So as part of that, you're now working with a vendor. They understand your sustainability initiatives. They want to get engaged with you, but now you're at the point of negotiations. And so as a procurement executive, what would be some recommendations or tips for brands to consider as part of negotiating?
Yeah. So the whole thing that I come back to is what are your priorities, right? And I always say that I like to be descriptive rather than prescriptive with my vendors, right? So I don't, it's not my job to tell my bottle vendor how to blow bottles, right? I'm going to tell them, this is what I need to do. I need X many bottles on this date, right? In order to meet the needs of this new launch or whatever. You tell me how we can run this and like at whatever cost target I need, right? Mm-hmm. But really understanding those priorities of, is it time? Is it the sustainability thing? Is it the cost, mm-hmm. right? And then allowing your vendor to come to you with the options on how to get there. That mm-hmm. is, that's the goal. That's where this really all changes is I'm willing to flex on everything except for these couple priorities, mm-hmm. right? And then from there, your vendors come back with, this is how I can meet that need, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes they're going to say like, hey, you know, I'm going to piggyback you off this other big run, right? But so you're going to have to wait 2 weeks, two extra weeks. Is that okay, right? Mm-hmm. Or they're going to say like, hey, you know, we want to showcase your product at our next show that we're doing, right? Can you come and support? It's like, there are so many things that you can do to leverage with your vendors if you know what their needs are. And if you're very clear about what your priorities are, this is how you get the most value from your vendors.
Here we go with value again. Guys, y'all hear Rachel keeps dropping it in between because value is important, you know, at the end of the day. And so I wrote this down because this is going to be included in the show notes to be descriptive instead of prescriptive. I think that's mm-hmm. Look, girl, you be dropping these lines and I need you to trademark these or something or put on a t-shirt. I don't know what you need. Wallpaper for procurement manager. Oh no, but
I think I, wallpaper. I'm a fan of that. That'd be great.
Yeah. So look, I'm just putting it out there into the universe for you. You need to create a wallpaper or something, or like a reminder that pops up. Hey, be descriptive, not prescriptive. You know, just as like those
right. You know, tell people there's so much greatness like with all these people that you talk to, whether they're external or internal. And the more you're open to what people can bring you. Like, why wouldn't you want an expert to tell you the best way to get you bottles, right? Like, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Like, you know, vendors and suppliers are partners. You know, they should not be looked at, you know, just as a silo department. Like, they do their thing, we do our thing. No, it is really a partnership because we cannot produce the product if we don't have the vendors and suppliers. You know, if we're not able to be descriptive in telling them what our scope of work is, what we need, what's our cost target, what sustainability means to us, and how they can help meet us there, you know, with our initiatives and understanding regulations. What have you seen or what have you done to be compliant with this regulation? So they're all about partnerships at the end of the day. It is not just a sole entity that's doing their own thing or any of that. So I think that's gold. And I want to ask you, because I see you talk about this and I've heard you speak about this, about your two non-negotiables. Yeah. So share with us a little bit about your two non-negotiables requirement.
Yeah. So I feel like now I'm just like saying quotes, right? But like, if everything is important, nothing's important, right? And I'm a ruthless prioritizer, like kind of in life in general, but everything is important with your product that you're trying to produce, actually nothing is important, and you're going to find lots of gaps along the way. So for me, when it's a new product launch, when it's just, hey, we're in growth mode, the team should really, you should be able to make a list of all the priorities, force rank them, right? And you can only have two non-negotiables. Everything else has to be negotiable, right? Because if you can't do that, that means that you're not clear on your mission, on what you're trying to achieve in that project, in that new product, right? So, and by doing that, then that allows you to be flexible to ensure those top two priorities. Otherwise, everything gets mixed and lost in the process. So for me, I have no problem enabling my teams to go against each other head to head to figure out what the true priorities really, really are in whatever product launch we're talking about.
I love that. And I'm going to start adopting that into my way of working too. So I'm just going to borrow that from your toolkit and add it to mine. Thank you. And I encourage everybody listening to do the same thing too, because I think that's key. A lot of times we try to focus on all priorities. So how you were talking about sustainability, you know, like, are you trying to reduce waste? Are you trying to reduce carbon emissions? Are you trying to, you know, increase PCR percentage? Yeah, all that's great, but then you're going to fall flat on your face. So similar to what you mentioned, list out all priorities and then determine what are those two non-negotiables. And I like your leadership style, to be honest, because you're enabling your teams to think through this and to really discuss what that looks like, why there are differences amongst the team, to then be able to net out on, okay, comprehensively and collectively, we decided on these two non-negotiables. We were like, okay, we know what we're working with, and be able to communicate that to your vendors. So I appreciate you for sharing that. I always love when you talk about it because you're so passionate about it. Like, you have two non-negotiables, not three, it's two. It's two. So I love that. And so asking you this as we start to wrap up our time for today. So with you working in procurement for quite some time, background packaging engineer, and now working in procurement, worked in various CPG brands, and now with Harvest Hill Beverage Company, what are some misconceptions about the procurement industry that you would like to address based on your experience?
Yeah, well, there's a lot, but let's focus on one I think is going to really like hammer home with the audience here. Is a lot of times I talk to startups and smaller brand owners, and they talk about like their supply chain issues, right? And they're like, oh, and I need like a supply chain leader, right? Or I need, you know, to relook at like how I'm managing my supply chain. And most of the time, you're talking about like working with co-packers, right? You're trying to get more from your vendors. You actually really need a procurement person, right? So when I talk to smaller brands and look at their challenges, focusing on someone who actually has a much more deep procurement experience, who can do the vendor management piece, that is going to be a huge, huge benefit to you. The end-to-end supply chain and knowing, you know, the logistics and the full S&OP process, that's super valuable. I'm never going to like take that away. But in terms of like, if you want to like lay down cash and get back money, like bringing in a procurement person to truly manage your vendors, that's going to be such a huge, huge value for you. When a lot of people think like, oh yeah, we'll get a procurement team later. Like, no. Bring that in sooner. And if you use that as your bedrock for your supply chain organization, it's a huge, huge benefit.
Okay. So what I'm hearing is procurement is probably team resource number three.
I was like, yeah, somewhere along there. Right. So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So within the top five, okay, that's, you would say procurement should definitely be within your top five for resources. But I think that's gold because a lot of times, especially for like independent brands that are growing and scaling and such and get into retail, they think, okay, I need a supply chain person to do all the things on the back end. Okay, yeah, that's great, you do. But being intentional and understanding those relationships, somebody who's able to, you know, that understands vendor management, which is key to help you with your bottom line and save on the dollar bills, I think that's very valuable. You know, so as you're starting to grow your brands, and this is for my brands that are listening, as you're really growing your brands, listen to what Rachel is saying. Follow her on social media because she is speaking from corporate experience and you all are leveraging these things, techniques and tactics right here on the Product and Packaging Powerhouse to adopt into your business. And that's really the purpose of this podcast is to help you all with advancing, ascending and accelerating your brands into the marketplace, whether that's D2C, retail. So the fact that procurement is in the top five resources, that lets you know you need to have somebody in place to help you with vendor management. But even for corporations, as you're thinking through your resources and workforce, because workforce today is different than pre-COVID, you know, so I really encourage corporations, and Rachel, you can attest to this and add context too. Corporations needs a procurement department and procurement head as well. And hope you would be understanding how to save on the dollar cents and the vendor management. You know, so for corporations, what would you tell them or what recommendations would you give them?
Yeah, so you kind of see two things, right? It's been really interesting watching C-suites develop over the last number of years, right? And there's been, I would say, a decline in the number of CPO, like chief procurement officer positions. Most companies still have a head of procurement, right? But they've kind of lost that seat at the C-suite table. And I'm speaking very, very generally speaking. I still think there's huge value in having a procurement person on your C-suite, but if they're not there, they should be reporting into the COO. I have fights frequently on LinkedIn about this, but you know, you have a lot of procurement organizations still reporting into finance, and I think that's the wrong thing. I think that having your procurement organizations reporting into supply chain is a much more powerful and strong alignment structure to really make sure your business is gaining the momentum and having the supply assurance and things like this to manage and grow business and add value.
You know, you're the first person that's been in procurement that actually says you recommend they report to supply chain department versus finance. And I've never looked at it as such because, you know, procurement is all about, okay, we need to get approval on this, you know, but having it report to supply chain can optimize the way you how you source and create the different products, the, you know, the life cycle of them, thinking through this full supply chain process, supplier scorecard, you know, vetting and assessments, you know, so I think that's key. And I appreciate you for sharing that, because all the time I hear report to finance, and that's what I've always seen in transparency.
That's when you're thinking of value on just a balance sheet, right? But when you're thinking about how are you supporting growth of your business, how are you supporting delivering to your end customers, mm-hmm. that's operations, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what should be driving your decisions around your sourcing, right? Not just mm-hmm. the dollars and cents on it.
I love it. So as we're wrapping up for today's segment, last question for you, which is reflecting on your full career. So from a packaging engineer to now VP of procurement, and you're in the beverage space, so you're constantly staying a student and learning. What has been a significant milestone or achievement in the procurement space?
I'm going to frame this as my proudest moment. I was at Revlon and I was the head of direct procurement. So over $1 billion of spend rolling up to me, you know, across the world. I was a couple months in and we filed bankruptcy at very, very short notice. Chapter 11. This is all out there in the world. So nothing of this is it's confidential.
There's no secret now. Yeah.
There's no secrets. Right? But we had over 250 vendors who were impacted and we had to do 250 settlement agreements. And, you know, with a very, very short notice, I was coming up with a communication plan, a process, like how do we even go through bankruptcy, right? Like this was a chapter 11. I had no one ever sat me down in school or in any procurement training session I'd ever been in and be like, this is how you do it, right? So, you know, there was a proud moment of getting my team and everyone through it. But the thing I'm actually really proud of is that my vendors wanted to do business with me after, while I was still at Revlon. And then they wanted to do business with me even after I left Revlon. I always tell people as a procurement person, but I would even say this for anyone out there, you should be able to have a vendor as a reference, like on your, for any resume, right? And for me, being able to walk away with people still wanting to talk to me, still wanting to work with me, that is the thing that I am most incredibly proud of throughout my career.
I love that. But like we talked about earlier in our conversation, it's really a testament of how you do business, how you're strategically building those relationships and really getting being descriptive and not prescriptive, as well as thinking through the two non-negotiables. So when you're kicking off efforts with a supplier and vendor, they know here's our two non-negotiables for this product launch. Here's the description and our target cost. What can you do? And I think that's really a testament to how you do business and how you're looking at much bigger than just the present. You're thinking downstream 12, 18, 24 months down the pipeline too. You know, you have to, especially in procurement, to understand what's going on and having the products roll out accordingly.
So I literally rewrote a proposal for a vendor to send to me because I said, I know what you need. Like, I want to work with this vendor, right? We're talking about a contract extension, blah, blah, blah. And I said, send me your draft. And I rewrote it and sent it back to him and said, these are the points that are going to help you sell this into my organization because this is what we need. And I'm telling you what you need to succeed here. So it looks really good now. And fingers crossed to get signed off the next week. But you know, enable your vendors to do their job. Tell them what you need, right? Tell them how they're going to be able to succeed for you, right? So,
and the fact that you were willing to tell that vendor or supplier like what they need and enabling them to help be set up for success, kudos to you. Because most people would not be willing to do that. So I want to just shout you out and give you a moment of recognition on that because once again, that leadership style, like how you're able to enable your suppliers to tell them what you want, what the company needs, and how they can meet you. So it's true leadership. And then having this be displayed amongst your team, because I know you're a trainer, your team, and you're a leader. So people are going to follow you based upon how you lead them in this space. So just have to shout you out, girl, because you're just doing the darn thing. So I love it. So as we are wrapping up for today's segment, guys, right here on the Product and Packaging Powerhouse, I hope you have enjoyed our conversation with Rachel Hassel. And we're about to get into some of her fun facts during the power round. So if you listen to Yes, it's on the hot seat, girl, hot seat. So guys, if you listen to our episodes, you know we do a fun fast facts about our brands and also our guests right here on the show. So I'm going to put 60 seconds on the clock to ask Rachel about some of her favorites. So to give you context of what we're going to be talking about for today. So fun fact, Rachel hinted at this at the beginning of the episode. So she has lived in 3 countries and 4 states. Look at you, global. She also after a 2-year hiatus, she is returning back to powerlifting in June. So guys, I hope y'all are ready to get into this power round. So Rachel, you ready?
I'm ready. Let's go.
Let's go. Okay. So out of the 3 countries and 4 states you lived in, what was your favorite country and why?
Germany, probably because for most of the time I was there, I was 21. So it was a good time.
Okay. Okay. So during your 2-year hiatus from powerlifting, what was your favorite way to stay active or fit?
Chasing my 2 small humans.
Okay, fair enough. Especially when the baby girl lays on the sidewalk and takes a nap. Got it. So looking ahead to the powerlifting platform in June, what's one of your go-to songs to get you in the zone?
Wolf Like Me by TV on the Radio.
Oh, cool. Okay. And then last question, what is one phrase or quote you live by in the procurement world to help you stay inspired?
It's not hard to make decisions when you know what your values are. And that's by Rory Disney.
Oh man, we write that song, girl. Lightning speed. That's what I'm talking about.
I was most nervous about this power. That was, I was like, I gotta go. Come on, let's go. So,
girl, you knocked it out the park. Like, easy button for you, ma'am. So, can I just say how you're just a badass? Like, because guys, if you don't know and you haven't seen one of her prior posts, it's been a while ago. You were powerlifting when you were pregnant. And so, so she shares that. And then now to come back to it, like, just talk about badass energy. Okay. I love that. So kudos to you going back to the platform. And what would be your favorite? What would you want to specialize in? Would you want to do deadlifts, back squat, front squat?
I'm a bench presser. That's my area. It doesn't gain you most points, but it's the thing I'm best at. So.
Okay. So don't mess with Rachel. Okay. Cause listen, she says bench pressing is her thing. Gone girl. So mine is deadlifts. I'd rather do deadlifts than anything chest related, arms related. So shout out to you, girl.
Pick it up and put it down. Right. You got it.
I love it. So as we have wrapped up our time today, Rachel, share how people can get in contact with you and your last tip for everybody today.
So the best way to get in touch with me is to find me on LinkedIn. I'm very active there. That's where you can find any and all things related to business and the world in general with me. And please reach out. I'm always happy to have a conversation. I actually have a little Calendly invite on my LinkedIn. Click it. And on my drives home from work every day, that time is free. So I'm always happy to jump on a phone call. So find me there. And the last tip is just be open to saying, yeah, say yes if you can.
I love it.
And listen to Megan's podcast because it's amazing. So,
thank you. Look, y'all heard Rachel say you need to listen to the podcast. So make sure you do follow, like, and subscribe and share this with at least 5 professionals in your network because our net worth is based upon our network. And all of Rachel's information will be down in the show notes for you all. So you don't have to go and look and scour the internet for it. It is right down in the show notes for you. Just click the link and make sure you do book an appointment to speak with Rachel one-on-one as well. And so guys, as we've spoken with Ms. Rachel Hassel, VP of Procurement at Harvest Hill Beverage Company, and also a CPG procurement executive. He dropped a lot of gems, but the main things we want to hit on as we're wrapping up for today, create that resiliency plan, be descriptive, not prescriptive, and understand what sustainability means to your business at the end of the day. And so guys, I hope you enjoyed today's conversation with powerhouse guest Rachel Hassel, and make sure you do follow, like, and subscribe, and we'll see you on the next episode.